in progress.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Alameda County Board of Supervisors Personnel Administration and Legislation Committee of June 16, 2025. May I have a roll call, please?
Supervisor Fortunato Bass.
Present.
Supervisor Tam.
Present. Thank you. Let's start with the federal legislative update.
Thank you, supervisors. I will first go over the schedule for this week. And full disclosure, it's a short one. The Senate is in session this week, likely until June 18th, before pausing for a brief recess in observance of Juneteenth, which is this Thursday. The House is in full recess and will return to session on June 23rd. Of course, the big topic of the news continues to be the budget reconciliation bill. The Senate continues to advance its version of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, though many lawmakers acknowledge that the goal of sending it to President Trump by July 4th is overly ambitious and will likely not happen. Committee staff, primarily within the Finance and Agriculture Committees, are finalizing key provisions behind closed doors, with Senate Republicans are crafting a scaled-down SNAP cost-sharing proposal requiring only high-error states to cover 15% of the benefit cost, down from 25% in the House-passed version. This would, of course, include California, while keeping the administrative share increased to 75% by FY28. The only committee that's left to release its text is the Senate Finance Committee, which we are anticipating will be released sometime tonight. They are meeting. Members of the Senate Finance Committee were provided versions of the text over the weekend. These, of course, were embargoed. They will release the text with the name of the senators on the back so they don't get leaked. They are then going to provide a briefing to the whole Senate conference tonight after 5:30 votes, where they will go through the provisions to collect sort of initial thoughts. So far, we've heard that the Senate package will differ in some pieces in the House passed version. They will maintain the current $10,000 state and local tax deduction cap, rebuffing the House's $40,000 state and local tax deduction cap. There have already been responses from some of the members of the SALT caucus and members of the New York delegation with very angry responses to the Senate's approach to state and local tax cap deduction. We also anticipate that they'll make several changes to the Medicaid provider taxes, including a freeze on provider taxes for the non-expansion states. And then in contrast to that, there'll be a reduction in the provider tax cap from 6 to 3.5% to Medicaid expansion states. So that includes states like California. However, there is likely to be a carve out for provider taxes specific to nursing homes. They could also make changes, and we're anticipating these, on the state directed payments, with non-expansion states setting a freeze at current state-directed payment rates, while expansion states like California will undergo a gradual reduction to Medicaid rates phased in a 10% cut annually until parity is reached between the expansion states and the non-expansion states. Senate Finance Committee has also stripped out several of the Medicare provisions, including an increase in the Medicare reimbursement rate for physicians. This is called the Doc Fix. There's also the Orphan Cures Act, which would have ensured that orphan drugs treating one or more rare diseases or conditions are excluded from the Medicare price negotiations. These were included in the Inflation Reduction Act. That has been stripped out. And the Accelerating Kids Access to Care Act, which would streamline out-of-state Medicare screening and enrollment process for pediatric care, that has also been stripped out. In the budget reconciliation bill, they've also included a substitute amendment to the House passed bill, and which will likely mean that the bill will move directly to the floor without a formal committee process. And if passed, the revised package would turn to the House for final approval before heading to the president's desk. They, of course, have aimed that this would get passed before the July 4th. That seems out of reach. It's possible that they get this out of the Senate before July 4th recess and then send it over to the House. The House, of course, will very quickly be able to pass it, but they'll have to likely do that after the conclusion of the 4th of July recess. In addition to the reconciliation bill, which again, we will see the bulk of the text come out tonight after 5:30, the House passed last week a rescissions package targeting unspent foreign aid and public broadcasting funds. The measure was paired with a procedural resolution to remove provisions from the reconciliation bill that were flagged in the Senate rules. These were considered technical corrections between the House and the Senate versions. In addition to rescinding funds from the U.S. Agency for International Development and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the package also included proposed reductions to economic support programs and multilateral assistance that's administered by the State Department. Many of the supporters described the rescissions as a step forward in reducing discretionary spending, but we do anticipate that the bill will have some difficulty passing the Senate because Senate Appropriations Chair Susan Collins has voiced some concerns, and there's been some internal discussions as to who will be managing the bill when it reaches the floor in the Senate. And then, in addition to reconciliation and rescissions, we are also monitoring and reporting back on the appropriations process. And to date, the House Appropriations Committee had completed both the subcommittee and full committee markups on four of the FY26 bills. These include the Milcon VA, the Ag Bill, the Homeland Security Bill, and the Defense Bill. We will also provide in the notes a schedule for the subcommittee and full committee markup dates. But this is all to say that we do anticipate a continuing resolution come September because there is no agreement between the House approach and the Senate, let alone the administration. And then it's a question of whether or not we will have another CR following the initial one in September, or they'll be able to get a full year FY26 appropriations bill with all the bells and whistles we've come to know and love. But that remains to be seen. So I will stop there and, of course, happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for a very thorough report. Supervisor Fortunato Bass, questions, comments?
Thank you for the update. I am curious, given the activities of the past weekend, whether and with our congressional members being home, whether you think the have any sense of whether the landscape might change given, you know, constituent issues and feedback in our lawmakers' home districts?
Well, at this point, it's in the Senate's hands. So the Senate is still in DC. They will not be returning back home for the extended recess like the House. I think the politics essentially remain the same between when the House passed the bill and when the Senate will take up its version. If and when the Senate does pass its version of the bill and it gets sent back over to the House, there's a strong likelihood that the House will pass whatever the Senate gives it in the event of trying to maintain the momentum. If the House were to make changes to whatever passes in the Senate, they'll have to send it back to the Senate. And that would make ultimate or final passage very difficult. So I think the politics have remained the same on the Republican side. I don't anticipate that that will change, especially for the House committee, for the House members. But you might see some changes between now and final passage in the Senate.
Thank you.
Thank you. So at this point, we're still tracking the August-September timeframe when they have to decide on the debt ceiling before we'll see anything substantive, you think, going back to the House on the reconciliation bill?
And so the debt ceiling is separate and is a little bit different than what's going on in reconciliation. They've set an internal deadline for July 4th to pass the reconciliation bill, but that could slip to sometime in July before the August recess. We're still unsure what the X date is for the debt ceiling, but that does not really seem to be the most pressing issue. For the House and the Senate to get this bill passed, the pressure to pass the bill seems to be coming more from the White House on a political issue than necessarily the sort of fiscal impacts that a failure to raise the debt ceiling will have. At least that's the conversation this week. Of course, there's still a lot of time that needs to pass before when Senate Finance releases its bill later today or early tomorrow. At the latest, and when they will ultimately take up the bill on the floor. A lot can happen between now and then, as often does in DC. But as it stands right now, we're still kind of anticipating the bill to pass sometime in July before the August recess.
Okay, that's changed, even though July 4th may be super optimistic and aggressive on their part. I appreciate that. So we have a request to once again, from both our social service and healthcare agencies, to oppose, I'm going to say, the one big horrific bill with HR 1. And I think this time it's related more toward the cuts in the SNAP program and the impacts on food security for a lot of the counties that are receiving those kind of funds. We have concurrence that we will move this recommendation forward.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Any other comments, John? Or?
That is the conclusion of my report.
Thank you. Appreciate it very much. Stay safe out there.
Supervisor, we have a speaker on item one.
We have a speaker on item one. Okay.
Kathy, you're on the line. Kathy, are you speaking on this item, the federal update?
No, I'm sorry. That's the wrong one.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Let's move to the state legislative update.
Thank you. Good afternoon, supervisors. We had an eventful week in Sacramento. As we reported previously, the legislature had their version of the budget, which they approved on Friday in floor sessions on each respective house. SB 101, the budget bill, was presented to the governor on Sunday, and he has until Friday, June 27th, to sign, veto, or issue line items on that budget. In the meantime, negotiations between the legislature and the governor are ongoing as they try to work towards a three-party agreement. Dozens of trailer bills, which are the statutory implementation measures for the budget, will begin moving through their respective budget committees and onto floor votes later in June. Some of these are already posted in draft form on the Department of Finance website. We'll make sure to include a link to that in our PAL report. As is often the case, we expect additional budget bill juniors may follow in August and September as the legislature wraps up their session by September 12th, including any sort of technical cleanups that may be required after they've reached their final budget deal. As we've talked, obviously these federal developments could significantly impact the state budget. Even before passage, the administration has signaled there are threats to key funding streams that the state relies upon. Many are anticipating that the governor likely will call a special session for policymakers to need the to make any needed adjustments to the state budget as necessary after the feds act. On Friday, as I mentioned, both the Assembly and the Senate met and they debated SB 101, which was the budget measure that the governor is in possession of. And they also sought to address the $12 billion projected deficit. There were a number of topics that came up because, even in the legislative proposal, some of the members were not happy with some of the final portions of the legislature's budget. One of the topics that came up was funding for Proposition 36. There was widespread discussion amongst both Republicans and Democrats addressing its funding, with some praising efforts by the legislature to fund it, while others argued that even the funding included was not quite enough. Many members commented on funding for housing and homelessness. They were upset that the governor's May revision did not include any funding for homelessness. And they were happy to see that the legislature did include some support for the issue of area. However, I would note that the legislature's action was intent language only for $500 million for the next round of HAHAP funding. So it's not actually funding, it's intent to fund it. And then lastly, and of course, the discussion around Medi-Cal was primarily centered on coverage for immigrant communities and the overall fiscal sustainability of the program. Several Democrats actually did not vote on the budget bill, either with a no vote or they just did not vote at all, upset that even in the legislature's version, which they described as rounding out some of the governor's May revision cuts, there were still, cuts to the program, including those within the immigrant community. And then Senator Blakespear, made a comment about them needing to moderate their approach because of the expenditures coming in triple what they expected. And our Powell report will include the floor vote count so you can see who voted and who did not. Of course, I'm sure you all saw the news, and our Attorney General, Rob Bonta, on June 12th announced that 21 other state attorney generals filed an amicus brief in support of California's lawsuit, which was challenging the federal government's unauthorized deployment of the National Guard down in Los Angeles. The brief urges the court to block Trump's unilateral federalization of the state troops. A federal appeals court has since issued a temporary stay, allowing President Trump to retain control of California's National Guard in Los Angeles, despite a prior ruling by U.S. District Judge Charles Breyer that the deployment violated federal law. Judge Breyer found that Trump's use of the Guard to support ICE operations during recent protests were unlawful, as federal law permits federalization only in the unique cases of invasion, rebellion, or breakdown in local law enforcement. Governor Gavin Newsom and other state officials have denounced the move as an unconstitutional overreach. The appeals court is scheduled to hear the case on Tuesday, so more to come on that. Obviously, what was happening in Los Angeles was also dominating policymakers in the debate that were happening, with Trump urging U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement officials to do all in their power to achieve the important goal of delivering the single largest mass deportation program in history. That announcement followed days of widespread protest in Los Angeles and across the country against the administration's handling and hardline immigration policies. While the immediate impact of Los Angeles remains unclear, the Department of Homeland Security announced Sunday that it would pause most raids on farms, restaurants, and hotels. Obviously, I think a lot of people in town were talking about the fact that as part of this, Senator Padilla was detained and released, our sitting U.S. Senator, and that Governor Newsom was threatened with being arrested. On the heels of this, as I'm sure you saw this weekend, the No Kings protests swept across California and nationwide. Thousands of demonstrators gathered throughout California on Saturday as part of the nationwide coordinated protest. In part, some of the conversations in Sacramento were that they wanted to vote on the budget on Friday because many members were anxious to get back to their districts in anticipation of these protests. On June 14th, more than 10,000 demonstrators filled the streets of Oakland's Chinatown and marched to Frank Ogawa Plaza. More to come on that. And we'll see. I think it'll continue to dominate conversations in Sacramento as people wait to see kind of what unfolds here and what the Trump administration's reaction to the protests will be. Also of note, the Legislative Analyst Office has released two different reports that we will include in the Powell report for those that are interested. The first report is entitled Retail Theft in California, Looking Back at a Decade of Change. The second report provides an update on California's public health laboratory systems following the COVID pandemic. And as I said, we'll have links for each of those reports in our report that we send out later today. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, especially the highlights of what happened over the weekend. Supervisor Fortunato Bass.
Thank you, Amy. That was another great, excellent report, actually. Could you maybe walk us through between now and the 27th when the governor needs to act on the budget, what some scenarios might be?
Absolutely. I can tell you kind of what the most common sort of mechanics have been in recent years, which is he is in possession of 101. Frequently, and we are hearing today that the administration has begun negotiations with the legislature, they'll actually introduce what we call a budget bill junior, which is another budget bill that would amend the bill that he already has in his possession. I think most people are anticipating that that's what will happen and that that bill will really need to be in print here. What we heard today is that they are working to get everything in print later this week to give them plenty of time and to be in print for the 72 hours to act before his deadline of June 27th. We're only hearing rumors at this point, but one of the things that we heard today is that the architecture of it, which the legislature actually, it was about $2 billion above the governor and their proposal, just through some of their internal borrowing that was slightly different from May revise, that people largely think that that structure will be intact, and that most people believe that the legislature's version of the cuts and freezes to Medi-Cal will prevail over what the governor proposed in May revise. Of course, we won't know until it's in print, but I think people are thinking the architecture the legislature sent is likely going to be kind of the total revenues that they'll be dealing with in the final budget act.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Thank you, Amy. That's helpful too. Can you just recap what you just said about the HAP funding, the Homeless Housing Assistance and Prevention Grant Program, in terms of you were saying $1 million in grant funding was being proffered, but
so with the legislature, so obviously the governor put forward no additional money for HAHAP or for the homeless program. What the legislature has in their version is what we call intent language for $500 million. And I would point out that it's simply that, it's intent language. It doesn't actually provide the funding. And so we saw on the Friday floor debate discussion about that, with many in the legislature preferring that it be actual funding versus intent to fund at a later date.
Okay. So essentially you're saying there's no definitive commitment toward funding at this point for
that's correct.
Housing. Okay, that's not good, but that might change, hopefully. And then we did get informed by County Council. We were invited to sign the amicus brief that you talked about for the hearing that's happening tomorrow, because the board obviously didn't have a meeting between when we were asked and when the hearing was happening. We were asked each to sign individually, so I signed on to that amicus brief in my capacity as the supervisor, so just to let you know that. Are there any other developments that you think could happen between now and when the budget gets adopted on the Medi-Cal for the undocumented? Basically, starting, I think, next year, there's just no enrollment, right, that would be called for?
Yeah, so in the legislature's version, they freeze new Medi-Cal enrollment for those with unsatisfactory immigration status, ages 19 and over, beginning in January of 2026, with a six-month period to re-enroll for any of those who would be eligible to lose. They also institute a premium for these individuals, which the governor had as well. The governor had a premium of $100 per month. In the legislative version, it's now $30 per month. Yeah, and that would take effect in July 1 of 2027. So many of these things are happening in out fiscal years, and they need it to balance the budget. I do think, you know, some of that may change in the intervening time between now and 2026 and 2027. And even with these changes, as I said, you know, some Democrats within the caucus were not happy with these proposals, even though they are, you know, a little more generous than what was in the May revise. The other thing they did that was a big area of contention in the program was around the asset test for Medi-Cal eligibility. They've actually, in the legislative version, set it at $130,000 for individuals and $195,000 for couples, which as they view as more realistic than what the governor had in his proposal, which was just to revert completely back on that program. So long story short, I think Medi-Cal in particular has the most chance of having significant changes as we wait to see what the federal action is.
Okay, that's very helpful and promising. Appreciate that. Any other questions, or are there any public comments on this item?
I have no speakers on this item.
Okay. We have a number of requests for legislative positions. AB 309, a request to support from Alameda County Health, the hypodermic needles and syringe programs. And then AB 554, a request to support for healthcare coverage for antiretroviral drugs, drug devices, and drug programs. And then SB 454, this is a request to support from Supervisor Miley's office. We had discussed this at the Health Committee on providing a PFAS mitigation program for the State Water Resources Control Board. And then SB 660, it's a recommendation from Alameda County Health to basically support the California Health and Human Services Data Exchange Framework to essentially increase the protections and confidentiality of health records. Do we have concurrence on moving those recommendations forward?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Are there any public comments on items that are not on today's agenda?
Kathy, you're on the line. You have 2 minutes.
Hi, this is Kathy Rodriguez, and I'm coming to you guys today like I have been, and I'm pleading. Okay, so Alameda County Public Works is doing a work on Llewellyn Boulevard, and recently, just today, they put a square curb in front of my business to where no longer can anybody come in and out of my business in the front of my parking lot. I try to talk to them. They're not hearing me. I sent out emails yesterday concerning the county ordinance, concerning businesses and parking and having access so their business can still grow. And they're violating the county ordinance. I sent you guys all a copy this morning. Or yesterday, last night, because the framework went up on Friday concerning putting square curbs in front of three commercial businesses to where we no longer have access to get into our front parking lot. Me and my neighbor have an easement since 1965, and so they're saying, oh, well, you could use that. Well, no, excuse me. We made parking in front of our place for our customers, and now you're blocking it. And, it seems like Alameda County Public Works has an attitude, well, we could do whatever we want to do because, we're an authority. Well, they're abusing their power. They're abusing their authority. And I'm coming to you because something needs to be done. You know, not only am I affected, my neighbors are affected. There's a lot of businesses on the Welling Boulevard are being affected, and it's not good for the economy. It's like a lot of them homes were turned into commercial property. Okay, and it's like, I don't understand why you guys as leaders are not doing anything about it. You're just like letting them, and then our next meeting is in July. Well, everything will be done by then, and then how is that going to help us? You know what I mean? It's like, I'm pleading with you to help us. Is my time up?
Yes, that's your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other public comments?
No, we have no more speakers for public comment.
Will those online please identify themselves, and we appreciate your participation.
Good afternoon, Jessica Blakemore, Alameda County Health.
Good afternoon, Valerie Arkin from Supervisor Miley's office.
This is Hannah Hamilton, Alameda County Social Services Agency.
Hello, this is Leon Fernando from Alameda County Child Support Services.
Thank you. And we have Amy Schrago from the County Administrator's Office in the audience who helps us with this. Next week's PAL meeting, that's typically on Monday, will be canceled because we will have practically an all-day session on the budget. Thank you.